accession number 19043, reel 2.
Colonel Pemberton, reel 2.
Well, when we were split up, some people went to the 3rd Battalion, which had come all the way from Alamein, and others, including myself, went to join the 2nd Battalion, which had been with the 1st Army in North Africa and had eventually ended up at Tunis. We had a fairly long drive and eventually met up with the battalion at a place called Sousse on the coast, where they were resting. And I remember I was with another officer called Michael Hilton Green, who I'd been a friend of for some time. And we were a gang split up. I went to number 3 company and he went to number 2, I think. And it was rather alarming, sort of arriving with a battalion which had been in action and had some pretty tough experiences over the previous months. And one had to tread rather carefully and be very what I call tactful, because as a newcomer they were very critical of any newcomer. This was so it was a rather tricky time, but they were extremely kind, and one very soon settled down. My company commander, my first company commander, was a Major Bob Windsor Clive, and are you interested in the names of other people?
Well, that's probably on the record in any case.
Yes, you've got that. Yes.
What role were you allocated to in the
company? I took over a platoon. It was number 13 platoon. And that was all right. We spent a couple of weeks, I think, at Sousse, and it was a sort of getting to know you time for me, and we did a little bit of training as well. But basically, it was a sort of rest period for the battalion. And it wasn't... until after a few weeks, we moved on to a camp near a town called Constantine. Constantine was quite a large city inland, and we were camped. The whole brigade was a brigade which had the Coldstream, Welsh and Grenadier battalions in it, and we were camped in a large wood a mile or two outside Constantine. It was very basic. I remember I had a tarpaulin over a ditch was my home, as it were. There was very little proper tentage or anything else, but it was quite a pleasant wood. The only thing that I remember particularly about our time there was that it was very alarming at night, because the local Arabs, Bedouins, would come down through the wood and try and pinch, particularly rifles. Of course, if they could get rifles, they thought that was marvellous, but they'd pinch anything else they could get their hands on. And their field craft was wonderful. They could move through the wood without snapping a twig. And there was one night when I was actually, after a while, I progressed to a small tent, which I shared with two other officers. And I remember we had our bedding and our belongings sort of stacked beside our beds. We had our pistols under our pillows at night. But there was one particular night when we woke up and we found that most of our kit had disappeared while we'd been asleep. And so after that, we had to rig up tripwires and things around our tented area, hopefully to go off when these people came stalking down. And we had quite exciting evenings when they were discovered, and we set off through the wood and we tried to shoot them, but we couldn't. I don't think we did shoot any. But it was a rather hair-raising time from that point of view. But we did some serious training then, I think, knowing that we were going eventually to Italy. We made use of the rather mountainous area around Constantine for night marches and finding our way around and sort of practical exercises for which might be useful to us later on. And we were there for until the beginning of December. And then, suddenly, my company was ordered to move to Tunis. And we didn't know what for. And when we got there, we found we were to go to Carthage and protect a particular house there. We didn't know immediately what it was, but when we got there, we were told, and that was the house where Winston Churchill stopped on his way back from one of those conferences in Russia, where he and Roosevelt and Stalin had met, and he got pneumonia and was sick and couldn't get back to England, had to stop at Carthage. And he was there over Christmas that year, and our company was on guard all the time around the house. And that was a very memorable time, because as he got better, one of the things he seemed to enjoy was in the evenings, he always liked to watch a film. And he always said well, any officers of the company can come in, I'd be delighted if you watch the film too. And I remember watching one film there, and he was there with Mrs. Churchill, and Sarah Churchill, who was in the Air Force, I remember, was there. And that was rather fun. But nothing, no particular excitements happened. Well, one of the excitements, I suppose, was when Roosevelt, who had stayed for a day or two longer in wherever their meeting with Stalin had taken place, he arrived, and I must say it was, in spite of our security, the number of security men he had was quite unbelievable. And that was quite surprising to me. They didn't trust us at all. But he must, I think Churchill was there for about a week or 10 days. And then we went back and rejoined our battalion. And then very shortly after that, in January, we were alerted to stand by to go over to Italy. In the meantime, while we had been waiting, Sicily had been taken, and the landings had taken place at Salerno, and the Allied forces had got themselves established in Italy. And anyway, we then went over at the beginning of February, I think about February the 1st. We took ship from Tunis and landed in Naples. Terrible rough crossing. The ship had got some guns on the deck and was top heavy and rolled. I thought we were going to turn over. Anyway, we got to Naples safely, and then we were put into cattle trucks. Oui, Chabot, 40 Hommes, I think they were. And we went up to a place called Siena. And we spent one night there. And then the next day, we went down and crossed the Garigliano River, which had just been taken a few days before. And we were told we were going up into the mountains beyond that to take over from some brigade, I don't know. And so in the evening, we started going up the mountains. And it was pitch dark night. I think it was a miracle we ever got where we were supposed to go. And it wasn't a very pleasant experience, because when we got up quite high in the mountains, there was a bit of shelling. And we were just on a small track. And there was some supplies. There were mules that were taking ammunition supplies and things up the mountains. And they had made some dumps for ammunition at various points. And so when the shells started dropping near them, that wasn't very happy. And I remember one man in my platoon just couldn't take it, which was quite an eye-opener for me. This was my first sort of experience. And I didn't know how to deal with him, really. But anyway, I was able to hand him over to somebody who took him on one side. I don't know what happened to him. I think he was taken back down. But it was quite an eye-opener. And all we knew, we had very few instructions about where to go and so on. One was following rather like a sheep, the people in front going up with him. Eventually, when we got fairly near what appeared to be the top, to my amazement and horror, some British soldiers came running back down the hill through us. And I can remember, and it had a most terrific impact on me. One of the NCOs who was with these people said, come on, lads, stop. It's all going to be all right. The guards are here. And so when that happens, I imagine other people felt the same. One felt, well, my God, if that's the way people think, we bloody well have got to do something good. And we went on and up to, and had to occupy sort of scrapes in the ground which these people had had. And it was really quite a quite an alarming sort of situation. Anyway, we settled down for the night, and in the morning we looked around to find out where we were, and there were no Germans around at the time in the morning, so we were able to get into positions and things. And it was all rocky, and you could only build up a sort of rocky pit around you. And but we had a fairly quiet day, and to settle down. And then various things happened which are very vivid in my mind. The next night, as it was getting dark, I suddenly saw a man in a greatcoat coming down a ravine just in front of us. And my platoon sergeant said, fortunately, tipped me off. He said, look out, it might be a German. I couldn't see you. It was a man without any hat and a long overcoat. And he called out to us in perfect English. He said, where am I? Who are you? And the platoon sergeant said to me, I think he's a German. And so I shouted, halt! Hände hoch! And he just fired a burst at us from a Schmeisser and ran. He couldn't get him. But they were very cheeky, I must say, and had quite a bit of nerve to do that. He had come up to within about 25 yards on this rocky hillside. So we were all on our toes, and we had to watch out. We didn't have any more excitements that night. But they did occupy a bit of high ground to our right in front of another company. And the next day, we watched as our company on the right attacked them to try and drive them off this. And it was led, much to my sadness, by my friend Hilton Green, who was killed. And I could see it sort of across on the next hillside. It's not a nice experience. And then, rather precariously, we hung on to these positions for a couple of days. We were there when we could see the Casino Monastery from the top of our hill. And one of the days that we were there was the day they had the heavy bomber raid on the monastery. And that was quite spectacular. In fact, I don't think it achieved much, but it was quite spectacular to watch from another hilltop. I suppose we were 5-6 miles away, but we could see it quite well. And then the day came, a lovely clear day, and looking from our hill, we could see right down to the coast, to the west coast. And in the course of the day, we saw a column of Germans coming, winding up the valley. So we thought something was on. And sure enough, that afternoon, they attacked our position in some force. And the front platoon, our front platoon, was almost overrun. And our company commander, who by that time was not Major Windsor Clive, he had moved, was a marvelous man called Henry Green, who he'd been a commentator on the BBC for football matches at some stage before the war. And in his position, he always mapped out the ground in front of him as a football ground. And he would describe sort of where things were happening in terms of the football ground. And he was right up there in the thick of things. And my platoon was asked to come round and support him, and which we did. We moved across the side of the hill, and it was then pretty well dark and getting very misty, but we did deal with one or two Germans as we went. But Henry Green then called down our own artillery fire on the position, which in a way it was a very desperate thing to do, but the Germans were all out in the open, and a great many people in the company were still in their little pits with sort of rocks built around them. So the chance that they had a better chance of surviving than the Germans, and I think that was what his thinking was. At any rate, that was a hectic sort of 15 minutes while all hell was let loose. And then it all subsided and the Germans withdrew. But it was quite an exciting thing. I was wounded in the arm and side. And after we realized that the thing was subsiding, I took another guardsman who'd been rather badly hit in the head, and I said, I'll take you back to the RAP, because I could walk, I was all right, I could walk. And we went back to the RAP, and then the doctor took one look at me and he said, you've got a blighty. And I said, well, what do you mean, I've only got something in the arm? He said, well, we can't deal with this sort of wound here. And it was the nerve in my arm had been, he thought, cut. I couldn't use his hand. At any rate, he said, no question of going back to your company or anything. And so I then had to wend my way down the hill and ended up in hospital.
What was the date of this wounding?
It was the 13th of February, I think.
So this is the general area just to the south of Casino.
It was Monte Ornito, was the hill feature, was the mountain feature we were on. And it's now a battle honour. And the battalion actually had to stay there for another 2 weeks, I think. And it was really very unpleasant because it got extremely cold, and quite a lot of guardsmen suffered from frostbite. But they weren't seriously attacked again, I don't think.
What impression did the enemy create on you at Monte Ornito?
Well, I think one was impressed by them. One realized they were quite tough sort of people. I mean, I never got sort of hand to hand with them, but I shot a couple of them quite close to, who popped up over a rock, and I was able. And I think I was lucky because I had a silver cigarette case in my battle dress pocket here, which received a bullet and was badly dented. I had the feeling, well, if one's going to survive this, it's just luck. it gave one that sort of feeling, and I tried to keep that feeling for the rest of the war, because there's no point in worrying. You're either for it or you're not. Was the attitude I took. And I think if you can have that, it's a great comfort. I mean, if you start worrying, you really, it's awful. But no, I thought they seemed to be quite tough, and they pressed home their attack, and I had to respect them. I mean, I think they, even at that stage, when you think they'd been driven back from El Alamein and all that, I think it's amazing, and I felt it even more so later in the war. It was incredible, the discipline and the professionalism of some of their soldiers.
What weapon did you use to shoot the enemy on that occasion?
I had a Thompson submachine gun.
What did you think of that?
Too heavy. It was too heavy, really. And it was discarded, I think, after a while in the army. But we did, but we were issued with them. It had a four or five bullet, which was heavy in itself. But of course, if it hit somebody, it was very effective. And we did all our training with the Thompson submachine gun, so I was used to it.
What were the living conditions like at Monte Oneto?
Well, one just had to make a scrape in the rocks, and you couldn't dig down very much. And one didn't move about much in the daytime, more than you had to. Because we didn't particularly want to give away exactly where we were. But no, it was very primitive, and we did our own cooking. I can't remember what cooking arrangement. I think each platoon had a stove, but we kept to our sections. I had a group of men who were platoon headquarters, about half a dozen of us, and then the sections would be separate, and they'd do their own cooking. And they'd have to make an improvised latrine somewhere if they could, and keep that buried for hygiene reasons. But no, it was very primitive. And then the food we'd send a couple of men back. I think we had to send people back to company headquarters to collect rations occasionally, and then bring up rations for the whole platoon. But no, communications were pretty poor, because the radios weren't very good in those days either. Each platoon had a radio, but it didn't work awfully well.
Did you have any problems with the troops there?
No, they were marvellous. As I say, apart from that one man who fell out on the way up.